What's up, world? Welcome to the Positive Truth. We have a special interview today. Can you tell us who you are and who you're representing today?
So my name is Judith, or Judith in English. I'm here with DreamHack, representing DreamHack Oklahoma. We've been an organization here in Oklahoma City since about 2011, but the organization actually started in Tulsa with a group of undocumented youth in the university, in the community college, and then that's where they were trying to get scholarships for undocumented youth, so then they created the organization.
Absolutely.
And branched out into Oklahoma City.
Can you tell us about the goals for DreamHack Oklahoma?
So some of the things we focus on are working specifically with immigrant families, and even more specifically, immigrant youth. First, we were trying to push for the 2010 version of the DREAM Act, and then when that didn't pass, we kind of moved toward deferred action for childhood arrivals. And then now with this new version of the DREAM Act, we're pushing for a clean version of this 2017 DREAM Act.
Can you explain the three different versions for everyone that's not informed?
So in 2000, there were a few more versions, and you can't tell me to tell you every year right now because I won't remember all of them. But I know there was it initially started in 2001. It failed then. It failed in, I want to say it was 2007, and in 2010, it's when it officially died with less than five votes. It was five votes short of passing. So then when that failed, the national organization, United We Dream, who we're partnered with, they started pushing for deferred action for childhood arrivals, which is the program that I'm under, DACA, right? Because we saw that we weren't going to be able to get any legislation, and even then, when the majority were Democrats, we weren't able to get it passed, right? So then, in 2012 was when the deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA, when the announcement happened. It was an executive order by President Obama, and it didn't just happen willy-nilly, right? There were a lot of immigrant youth that were pushing for this to happen, and we were able to get it. In 2014, there was another announcement made that would expand this first one, this first version, so allow more people to qualify for this. Like, essentially, there was an age cap on this. This one was getting rid of that age cap, plus adding parents, right? So then this one was the one, the 2014 version, was the one that was being discussed. And it made it to the Supreme Court when the court was 4-4. There were only 8 justices. So then they tied and it went back to the state that was suing it, and it failed, right? So then the 10 attorney generals that are suing or demanded the Trump administration end this program, they're basing their same logic off of this 2014 version to end this one, right? So that's how we got where we are today after Tuesday's announcement.
Wonderful.
Good old Tuesday's announcement.
So how did you get involved with DreamHack Oklahoma?
So when the organization was in Tulsa, one of the founders reached out to a few people from Oklahoma City, and we went on this retreat, it was a United We Dream retreat in 2011, March of 2011. And it was a conference in Dallas. And I remember that space clearly because it was the first time where I didn't feel like I was the only one, right? You get so wrapped up in everything that you're doing to try to, for example, if you're trying to continue your education, you're trying to find like these loopholes, and then there's people telling you no, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then when you finally end up in a space where other people are struggling with the same thing, you're like, whoa, I'm not the only one, right? So then you're like, oh man, I gotta start taking action, right? I gotta take all of these ideas back to my state, and I gotta figure out what we're gonna do with other people who are also struggling with the same thing. So so that was a good space for me to be in, and thanks to that space, I am where I am today, just teaching me to question things.
Absolutely. So how many years have you been involved?
So since 2011, and don't make me do math. Six years? Yes. Six years.
That was great math. Yes.
Thank you.
For sure. So, how many people are on DACA here in Oklahoma?
So in Oklahoma, there are approximately 6,900 who have benefited from the program, give or take a few, because the last report was done in March of 2017, so it's not the most recent one. But yeah.
Do you have a number nationally?
Nationally would be almost about 800,000. 800,000, yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
So there's a lot of misunderstanding or complete lack of understanding mm-hmm. about DACA and what DACA does. Can mm-hmm. you explain it to the audience?
So the 2012 announcement of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, essentially what it does is defers deportation, right? So it's protecting you from deportation. You give your information to the government and they figure out whether you qualify or not based on the criteria that they gave. So if you are approved, that means you're protected from deportation for 2 years. And then you're protected from deportation for 2 years, which gives you an EAD, which is Employment Authorization Document. So work permit, you're able to get your Social Security card with that, and then you're able to get a driver's license. So then driving without fear of getting stopped by a police officer, or if you do get stopped by a police officer, is even better. Because I remember there was an instance where in 2012, I was stopped by a police officer. And I was stopped by the police officer, and at the time I didn't have I wasn't under this program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And he started asking me questions, right? And essentially I ended up in the back of his seat. He was looking up information on me, and long story short, he ended up letting me go with a few tickets, right? So then after that, I was able to qualify. I submitted my paperwork. Was able to get the work authorization and get my driver's license. And then I was driving a car that was, it was struggling. The car was struggling.
Gosh.
Okay. So I was driving the car, and it was kind of like putting along. And so then the cop car pulls up next to me, and I have my headphones on too, so that also was an indicator. Anyway, flash the lights, I pull over, and I have my card. Like, I'm ready to pull out my driver's license and show it to him. And then I had already taken off the headphones, and he came up and he's like, "I saw your car was struggling, like, what's going on?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's just a really, really, really old car." And then from there, he just walked away and just told me, well, before he walked away, he told me, "Yeah, don't have your headphones on." And I was like, "So you're not going to check this card? I'm ready to hand it to you. I finally have it, and you're not going to ask me for it." So, yeah, that was an interesting scenario. But that's what we're essentially protected from. So we're able to renew it every 2 years, or you're supposed to renew it before it expires, right? So about every year and a half, we have to renew it. The same $495 have to be, that's not including attorney fees, have to be submitted. So
every time you reapply, you have to pay another $495.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And am I right? You cannot have a criminal record to be on DACA?
So some of the requirements are, you had to have entered the U.S. before turning 16. You had to have been under the age of 31 as of the day of the announcement, which was June 15, 2012. Ooh, let me not get my years confused. Another one is you had to have been continuously living in the U.S. as of June 15 of 2007. So the announcement was made on June 5th of June of 2012, you had to have already been living here 5 years as of that date, right? There was also a lot of confusion with people thinking that once they were here 5 years, then they could apply. But it didn't work out that way.
So basically, you were 11 years old. Minimum of 11 years old. You had to be there for 5 years.
If you were under the age of six, so there are people that came in even earlier than that. So so there's those. You had to either be in school, currently in school, have graduated and attained a GED, or your diploma already, or been honorably discharged, right? But what does currently in school mean? It can mean you're either in high school, you're in GED classes, you dropped out and then you returned. It could be in a vocational school, it can be in English classes. So whatever accredited institution you're in, it counts as currently in school for you to be able to attain this. And then to answer your question, the criminal aspect, you couldn't have any felonies or significant or more than three or more significant misdemeanors. And then that gets into two technical terms for that's like more criminal attorneys have to answer those questions. So, yeah.
What about colleges?
What about colleges?
So you said you had to be in an accredited school. So does DACA, like, did DACA help you apply for college, or if you were in college?
So I was one of those that graduated college before DACA happened. For the younger folks, they were able to, DACA did open up some opportunities for them to go into college and receive funds to be able to go, not federal funds, but just receive like private scholarships that they were able to attain from the universities to be able to go. It wasn't a requirement to have already graduated or be in a college to attain the work authorization.
Absolutely.
So I coach at U.S. Grant High School, and I deal with a lot of kids that have this. I actually have a kid that's at St. Gregory's University now. Shout out to Fernando. he's running cross country, but he also got he was able to get an academic scholarship as well that paid for school. And now this leads me to this next question, which I have my personal opinions, which we all do out there. Why do you think it was the wrong decision to Tuesday's announcement?
Exactly. Yes, because 800,000 lives are now they're at risk of being deported after this program ends. They will, the possibilities go up higher now that they will be deported, especially in this with this Trump administration that's saying that criminal, what classifies a criminal, right? So breaking any immigration laws classifies you as a criminal, when we know that those were civil laws that were broken. And it doesn't necessarily what's the word I'm looking for? Connect, for now, for lack of a better word. So talk about the student that you have at St. Gregory's. We have seen where some of the funding for when students get accepted, they're told we're going to give you $20,000, and some of it ends up being federal funds. So then once they're already signing up, they're told you have DACA. DACA doesn't give you legal status, so that's why you don't qualify for federal funds. It is only work authorization. So no kind of legal status. So that means you don't qualify for federal funds, which means that any institution that was granting you this money now can't give it to you, even though they told you that they were going to give it to you, right? So it can only be private funds, not federal, yeah. So we have run into some issues with that, students being told that they can't.
So one of the things I've noticed is DACA generally affects the youth. Mm-hmm. So if we're deporting the youth to places, most of the time, they don't have anyone related to them there. This place isn't home. They spend the majority of their time here.
Yeah, and we've seen in classrooms where students have talked about wanting to be strong for their parents. They've been trying really, really hard to make sure that they're getting A's and B's so that they can get accepted into a college. They can continue with their education, but it just becomes very hard because they're trying so hard and they know that their options are limited, and this is going to limit it. Them canceling the program is going to limit it even more. So then most of them, for example, I was brought here when I was two and a half. I was 2.5 years old. So before I was able to travel back to Mexico, I only had, or I think I had created images of what they would tell me it was like, and the pictures kind of helped. But then in going there, when I was finally able to go, it was nothing like the pictures explained, and it is a lot harder, especially from the area where I'm from, where it's a very small town. There's hardly any work. It was very difficult. It would be very difficult to go into a space like that. I had family there, and there are individuals that don't have anybody back where they were raised. And then there's people that are coming. Juarez is a big, there's a high crime rate there. And to return to those spaces, there are individuals that came here because they were trying to escape from that kind of life. Yeah, there were individuals that were coming from Central America that were being told that if they didn't join the gang, then they would like kill them or their parents, right? So then they were fleeing these spaces where they don't feel safe, and they want to continue studying, and the place that they can do it is here in the U.S. So they're risking all of these factors of crossing the border, knowing what's going to happen if you run in with ICE, and then Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and then not even that, it's the traveling to get there, what could also be very, very dangerous.
For sure. So I've heard stories of walking through like the desert for 3 days without drinking any water, all kind of things like that. And
yeah,
I know a lot of kids these days, they're, you know, my parents worked so hard to get over here, all the stories that they went through, the things that they had to go through, you know, it's my job to go to school and try to become successful. Yes. I hear so many of those, and it's amazing. It's wonderful. And it hurt finding out this was taken away. Just, you know, they did everything right.
Yes.
All the information, everything is right here on the plate. Like, look, here you go. We just want to work hard. That's it. And it's tough. It's very, very tough. So I'm glad that you're here at the table to talk to us about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of negativity with this, but I know there's some success stories out there. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything?
So... There's, I want to talk one about DACA and then one that was not able to qualify for the program. So I'll start with, which one to start off with? So there are a few students, right? There's one at U.S. Grant. I think you might know him. Am I allowed to say names?
Yeah, you can say names.
Oh,
first name.
His name is Juan.
Juan Trujillo, shout out to you, Juan.
Yes, he is, oh man.
He ran cross country for me.
Yes, and he's just, wow. That's all I can say right now is wow. So he is someone that has been working very hard, not just with me, but with other organizations that would be able to help him make sure that he gets into college. I don't remember exactly what his major is.
He's an engineering major,
but he was working directly with OU students and trying to get into the school. He had come to some of the events that we were hosting to make sure that DACA, people knew about DACA, and he was one of the ones that was sharing his story of how they came to the U.S. and the options that he had here as far as education. And last year he started at OU, and he's been doing great. I think he got all of his college paid for. Yes. So he is, and then I see him now in other spaces, and he just looks so much older.
Facial hair, body filled out.
Yes. Wow. And he is, yeah. So then there's another one who wasn't able to qualify for DACA. And this is the one that I was telling you about, that people thought that after they had been here for 5 years, then they could qualify. So he actually entered in 2010, and he thought that by the year 2015, the program already being 3 years old, he would be able to qualify. But because he hadn't entered at least by June 15 of 2007, then he wasn't able to qualify. So a lot of his mentality beforehand was like, I'm gonna go back to Mexico. I'm not gonna be able to study here. Like, why did I even, like, why was I even brought here, right? So then we had conversations with his parents and letting them know that you don't need DACA to be able to go to school, right? I gave them the example of myself. Like, I was able to graduate before DACA was even, they were even thinking about DACA, and there were plenty of people that graduated before I did, right? So so then it turns out he graduated high school with 77 credit hours. 77 credit hours. He graduated with his associate's degree from Oklahoma City Community College. 77.
In high school?
In high school. He was in high school and he graduated with 77 credit hours.
So
yes, he is a very hardworking individual, and see, some of the things that we talked about with him was like trying to figure out what he wanted to study, because there were some closed options, right? You're supposed to be able to not everything that you study will allow you to get your certification if you don't have the proper documentation. It was the reason why when I went to college, I decided to go into photography, because I knew I wasn't going to need a certification in order to be able to do that. But now, with this DACA program, I have been able to return and get my master's degree in educational leadership, because I want to be a principal.
That's awesome.
It is, and I just wish that opportunity would be open to this young man who does not qualify for it. But then, like, this new version of the DREAM Act would allow for people like him to qualify. Because at first, with the DACA program, I was very, very, very opposed to applying. I was very mad because there were friends that were with me that were organizing in the community, and they didn't qualify for it. So I was just very upset. And then my mom told me to apply for it, and I did. And then when I got the card in the mail, I bawled, and I was jumping on the bed. But it was a very emotional moment. But yes, but it was good.
Where'd you go to college at?
So I went to, let me not get my letters confused, Oklahoma City University. Yeah, Oklahoma City
it's
University.
School.
It is a very expensive school. Not the other one. So I was a Clara Luper scholar, which would essentially pay, at that time, paid for all of my schooling. So it was an honor being a Clara Luper scholar. Yeah, she is an amazing woman, and it is.
Can you explain that for everyone that doesn't know what that is?
So Clara Luper was the first person to start the sit-in movements here. It started here in Oklahoma, and then it kind of just branched out during the civil rights movement, branched out into across the nation, right? So then I was reading somewhere that she had been arrested like 20 something times, and I think about it now and I'm just like, okay, I'm very close to her. I've been arrested once. Can we like keep this going? So yeah, it's just been an interesting, like, now that I think about the way that she worked, and at the time that I was going to school, I don't think I appreciated the way that she worked. I don't think I appreciated the scholarship like I do now. And I kind of wish that I had, like, just, I think it would have been even more powerful at the time. She was an amazing woman.
So the arguments against DACA is, like, one of them is they're mm-hmm. taking jobs from real Americans.
I love that quotation. Real
this is something that we've been talking about within the organization and outside, right? We talk about how with this program we've been able to create jobs, right? For example, I think the numbers, and don't quote me on this because I'm horrible with numbers, 344 million here locally contributed with the DACA program. 344 million. That's right. And then nationally, it's been 460 billion.
Are we talking about money?
Like contributions from DACA beneficiaries. Yes.
That's a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not not trying to be like, I'm just trying to give the opposite opinion, mm-hmm. like, that they're still taking jobs away from quote-unquote real Americans. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I, like, I still don't understand that, because we've been creating jobs is what essentially, like, that what I've been seeing, right, in hiring U.S. citizens as well. So I don't, I don't understand where that argument is coming from.
I don't either. I don't either. I'm just trying to, like, counter.
Yes, know? Yes, I understand. But I mean, the numbers are there, so I don't understand why they would want to get rid of the program when they know that economically speaking, like, this is it's very beneficial to the economy.
So this is not on our questions list, but I feel like I should ask it.
Okay.
So basically, I feel like there's a section of America that they point fingers at other sections of America. Mm-hmm. It's like, immigrants are the problem. Mexican, like, rapists are the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just a point. Like, they're just pointing at their problems and blaming you all. Mm-hmm. That's gotta be just awful feeling, you know what I mean?
It is.
So, like, when they say, like, you're taking jobs from Americans, like, they're saying, I can't get a job because I'm not qualified enough, and they're pointing at you all. I'm like, just get them all out, we don't care. Mm-hmm. It's almost heartless. Like, that's just what it feels like, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you, like, build the spirit of the youth whenever they see this everything?
So a lot of it is talking to them about being reflective of what they're saying, right? Knowing that a lot of them now growing up, sometimes they don't speak both languages, and we talk to them about the importance of speaking both languages, because that just means that you're that much more qualified to communicate with someone if they need to hire you, right? And it doesn't make sense to, like, why, how am I, someone that came in English was my second language, how am I able to take a job from a U.S. citizen if they're not qualified? Like, what, does that make sense? Like, someone that came in speaking English as a second language, how am I able to take the job of a U.S. citizen, right? So what does that,
like,
say?
It's almost like you're working twice as hard as everyone else.
Yes, yes. The brain working twice as hard. Yes. But yeah, I was, I forgot where I was going with that. Well, what's your question?
I feel like, just in general.
Oh, talking to youth about. So something that we've discussed with the youth following this announcement, right, has been something, things like understanding the way that you're, to let yourself feel the way that you've been feeling. If you're angry, feel angry. If you're sad, feel sad. If you're really mad and angry. If you just need to let vent, then allow yourself to do that. And we're not talking about, like, you know, reckless driving either, but we just want to be conscious of letting people know that it's okay to feel the way that they're feeling, because it's coming from somewhere, right? Because it means that they have that much more to lose now that this program is going to end. So what follows that is what's going to define you, right? Are you going to be someone that sits behind the scenes and then just does nothing? Or are you going to take action? And action doesn't have to be being out in public and saying, yes, I'm a DACA recipient. Like, I need it to happen. And it doesn't have to be public. It can be things like writing your story. And that's also a therapeutic method of, you know, venting.
Sure.
Very helpful. I've been doing it. saying all the really mean things I want to say instead of saying them out, all the profanity out loud. So then it can be writing your story and then sharing that at a national level, at a local level, with some organizations that want to, that are asking for people to share their stories, right? It can be calling your congressman, telling your congresswoman about, and sharing your story with them, and letting them know, like, I am one of your constituents, right? I, like, this is the reason why we need this, because a lot of the time they're not hearing what these stories are, right? They're just caught up in an office, they're caught up in DC, and they're not getting those phone calls. And it's happened at times where we've jammed them with the phone calls, that they've disconnected their lines at times. From calling, and this is not, I'm not talking specifically about DACA, I'm just talking about phone calls in general, right? So we want to get to that point, right? We want to make them have to disconnect their phone or it be jammed from the number of phone calls that they're making, right? There are other ways of also taking action. I know with the organization, we've, I don't remember what the name, but you essentially what you're doing is texting an app, and it'll send a fax to your congressman about what you want to say, right? And little things like that that people can be doing to take action as far as that goes. I was going to say something else, but I think those are it for now.
I enjoyed those dance moves.
Oh, thank you.
it sounds like you're in a civil rights movement. So, like, I've read a lot about the civil rights mm-hmm. movement in the 60s. Mm-hmm. One thing Martin Luther King said was, like, we don't just need black brothers out here marching. We need, like, white right. people. So, like, for everyone that's, like, me, mm-hmm. like, been here my whole life, I'm an American citizen, I don't have to deal with any of those problems, mm-hmm. which sound awful to me, like driving without a license. Mm-hmm. What is something I can do to help?
A lot of that could also be the discussions that we have with the youth, right? Like taking action, listening, doing what you're doing now is like sharing, helping me share my story and helping others share their story. If they're too shy to talk to their congressman, like that could be something that you're doing, right? So it's not just, they're not just hearing from us, the applicants, they're hearing from their U.S. citizen constituents and voters as people who can vote, like, because that's something that they want to hear too.
It's monumental.
Yes. And it helps. And I can tell you, it helps tremendously because we're not the only, if it was only us, there would be only 800,000, if that, 800,000 of us marching. But then some of these places, New York has had a great deal of people out there taking care of business. And then in California, they've also been doing the same thing. So it can't just be us. There wouldn't be enough of us.
Absolutely. So like whenever you hear about sharing your story, mm-hmm. I feel like what you're doing is you're bursting people's bubble in their life. Mm-hmm.
In a good way.
In a very good way. Like, this isn't like how we're viewed as just criminals, lazy, mm-hmm. just taking like insurance and mm-hmm. jobs away from people. That's not the truth. We're actually doing this. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine hearing these stories and being like, oh yeah, still get them all out of here. And you'd have to be really heartless.
Yeah.
So like, how do you all try to burst bubbles?
I think it's, that's a really hard question to answer because a lot of it is based on the reactions of other people, right? How this other person is going to react to the way, to your story, right? Some people want to hear numbers. Some people want to hear like your personal experience. Some people don't want to hear it, period. So they don't. And that's very hard because if as an immigrant youth, you're going to be sharing your story and that's the first one you run into, then you're going to kind of be like, I'm done, right? So then it's a matter of even training people to share their story, like your elevator pitch. What's going to be your elevator pitch to people, right? Practicing with them so that when they do run into scenarios like that, they know how to handle that situation because it's not always going to be rainbows and butterflies. Yes. That one just came out. But yeah, I think it's really touching people or like, cause a lot of folks are also used to listening to just one TV station. And this specific TV station is just saying like this and this and this, they're taking our jobs. They're rapists, to everything. Right. So then when you talk to them about these things that you're doing, you're like, hold up. What? This new station has been saying all these things about you, but it's not actually the case. Like, what's going on, right? So,
it's almost like you can't fit everyone in one small box.
Yes.
So, like, what other, like, supporters of, like, they want to repeal, what other arguments have you heard from them other than they're taking real American jobs?
They want to repeal, ask me that question again.
I got you.
Hold on.
So, what other arguments have you heard against DACA?
You gotta restart that one.
So what other arguments have you heard against DACA, and what would be your counter-argument against those arguments?
So now that we have this benefit, right, we're being told that we're qualifying for government assistance when that's not the case. Individuals that qualify for government assistance, for example, like some of the SNAP programs, and being someone that has helped in those spaces, we know that it's only U.S. citizens who can qualify for government assistance, because as DACA recipients, we do not have legal status, right? It is solely work authorization. Like, there is no pathway to citizenship. You can't even become, you can't become a lawful permanent resident and then from there go to.
There's no pathway to citizenship.
There is no pathway. No. What? Right? People thinking that there is? Yes. There is no pathway. It is solely work authorization.
That makes like no sense to me. If you're doing all this, like the story you just told about the kid doing 77 credit hours in high school, he can't be an American citizen?
He cannot. There is no pathway for him.
Oh, lovely.
So he's supposed to get in this imaginary line, but then family-based law, there you're supposed to have someone who's already a lawful permanent resident or a U.S. citizen to petition for you, but when you don't have anybody, you can't get in this imaginary line, right? That's so backlogged that.
We did an episode on like difficulties in becoming a U.S. citizen. Ooh. It's almost impossible. Yeah, it's really, really, really hard. I actually didn't know that about DACA. Like, there's no pathway to citizenship. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Hey, here, you can work. Thanks, work for us, build our economy. Yes.
And we're going to give you no benefits?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, well, what do you suggest supporters of DACA do in the next 6 months to hopefully put an end to the DACA repeal?
I think our biggest thing will have to be the people that we target. Really reaching out to our Congress people, specifically those that have, I know there has been discussion on how many votes were off from getting the DREAM Act, this version of the DREAM Act, to pass. So I think those specific individuals will have to become people that we're even more
focusing on
sharing our stories, right? Making sure that we're getting all of our voices heard, and discussing the economic piece to it, discussing how some of us are wanting to be teachers, some of us want to be principals, some of us want to be engineers, some of us want to be astronauts, right?
All things we need.
I was about to say, everything that we need. We have commercials with LeBron James saying we don't need another LeBron James, another Drew James.
So it's just taking action would be, and then getting involved with local organizations and national organizations to kind of to figure out how you can take action as well.
I think that's about it. That's all I got, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I have one question. Usually I like to end our interviews asking what your favorite quote is, but I feel like you have so much to say that can you take a second, and for all the DACA recipients that heard it got taken away, can you take a second to just talk to them and let them know what you think they should do next? As like you said, if you're angry, be angry. Can you just let them know really fast?
So I know, and we've had conversations in these spaces where I have told them the same thing. I think the biggest thing after you're done, well, you won't be done, because I've since Tuesday pretty much cried about every day. I think after you've gotten past that point of tears and anger, channeling that into action is what's going to help us, right? Not just us as a whole, but as an individual, to make sure that you're, I don't know how to say this, to make sure that you're okay mentally, to make sure that you're okay physically, because all of this negative energy will affect you physically. And it happened to me the day after the election, because I was so caught up with everything that was going on that I ended up breaking my leg. And to the people around me that were also focusing on the results of the election, me breaking my leg was a running joke because they said that this was keeping the leg was helping them not have to focus on what was going on, right? So then please don't break your legs. Let all that energy out and then make sure that you're taking action, right? If you're gonna be studying, make sure that you continue studying, but make sure that in the spaces that you're in, that you're sharing your story, if you feel comfortable, that you're sharing how you made it to the US, how you have continued your studies, whatever the case is, right? If you're working, share that aspect of your life. And sometimes it's not solely immigration related. There are so many other struggles that immigration is just a piece of it, right? So then letting people understand that it's not just that it's not just that aspect that affects you. There are other layers of you that that are affected by this decision, that you, in sharing your story, that will help people connect, right? So for example, as someone that hasn't experienced immigration, maybe you've been through a domestic abuse situation, right? And that might be a way that we're able to connect, right? Maybe you had a dog that passed away, and I had a dog that passed away, and we're able to connect in that aspect, right? And then after that, that's where you're able to start kind of building that relationship and sharing that aspect of your story, where you have people that are backing you up because they've been able to make that connection with you. So I want to end this very long rant by saying that you need to have hope. That you need to have hope that something is going to happen, because if you don't, then you will stay in that state of anguish, of concern, of bitterness, of angry, of sadness. And it's very hard and it's very hard to get out of that situation without the help of people. Without the help of people around you. So I say talk it out with people, and have dialogue. That's the same thing. Have dialogue with people. So yeah.
Awesome, very well said.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
On that note,
we're out.
Stay positive. Adios.